You must be at least 18 years of age to listen to the following podcast. This Endorphin High edition of Sexual Heroes can be found in the library at Endorphin High School of BDSM. Visit the school and library at endorphinhigh.org. I am Robert Black, and you are listening to Sexual Heroes. Drew Kramer is the 2011 Mr. Palm Springs Leather and the founder of the Palm Springs Bondage Club. He is also the author of the book 20th Century Leatherman and describes it as, quote, almost but not quite a work of fiction, end quote. Rather than an ordinary autobiography, Drew has crafted a story where the reader learns about his transformative experiences and relationships as a leatherman through multiple characters. Beginning in the 1970s, the cover also explains the book is an argument, a history, and a love story. Drew Kramer, thank you for being on Sexual Heroes today.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for the opportunity.
And I've been wanting to talk to you for a while about your book. And also, I got to see you not too long ago give a presentation in Palm Springs here for the Palm Springs Leather Order of the Desert.
Right.
I was seriously on the edge of my seat the entire time you did the presentation. I was totally drawn in. You are a great storyteller.
Well, thank you so much for that.
Your book is titled 20th Century Leatherman. You are a 20th Century Leatherman. I guess I am too. we both are about the same age. We both were in the same part of the country around in the, I guess, 80s, 90s.
Yeah.
In the Northeast, New York area. And I was in the New Jersey, Trenton, New Jersey area. But of course, our leather stories are quite different. What struck me first when I was reading your book, my life would have been so different if a story like this, a book like this, were available to me back then in the 80s and 90s, because we didn't have stories like that. We saw movies and read books about heterosexual characters, non-kinky characters, and we had to live vicariously through them, but they really didn't tell our story. And when I read your book, I thought, oh, I get the characters. I feel like I can really relate to them, and I didn't have to make a leap from a heterosexual character to myself. It was just, I could really live in the story.
After college, I was first living in Philadelphia. In terms of my leather experience, two important things happened there. Number one, I found my way to the Bike Stop, which is the leather barn in Philadelphia. Mm-hmm. And number two, I found my way to Giovanni's Room, which is a gay bookstore in Philadelphia. In Giovanni's Room, they had a shelf labeled leather. I made the discovery that there was a literature and there was essays and thinking and ethics and erotica around leather. It was something that you could jump into and just keep swimming and swimming and swimming. You know what I mean?
So you were aware that there was this leather subculture.
Right.
And so what year was that? Would that have been?
That would have been 1988, 1989.
Mm. Right. When I think about my first hint that there may be something going on that I might be interested in was probably The Village People.
Oh, wow.
Which debuted in 1977. And I remember being at my grandparents' house and was a little kid. So I would have been about 14. Mm-hmm. And I remember seeing them on the Merv Griffin show. I know a lot of listeners are going, who's Merv Griffin? They were on the Merv Griffin show. And I remember looking at the leather guy. And I was drawn to him for, you know, I guess it was, you know, it's just in us. And I had this awareness that there was something out there I did not know about, but I wanted to know about.
Yeah.
Obviously, the leather subculture was on the radar of mainstream media and music and culture, because otherwise he would not have been in that group.
In 1986, when Rock Hudson died of AIDS, and, you know, there was this flurry, you know, in mainstream media on the nightly news that Rock Hudson was in fact a gay man. My stepmother, you know, a woman in her 60s, I guess, at that point. My stepmother grew up in this town in Maine called Smyrna Mills, which was, you know, like miles from the Canadian border, the middle of nowhere, and made her way down to Pennsylvania and, you know, worked as a secretary and married and had kids. Not in any way a cosmopolitan life. All this stuff on the news about reactions to actor Rock Hudson being a homosexual. And she says, well, I don't know why everybody's making a big fuss. I knew he was gay. He was into leather.
Oh,
right.
Wow.
And like at that point, I don't know, I was maybe 12, 14. I had no idea what that was, but I remember like, what the hell? How does she know that? You know, I knew I was gay. How does she know this? And I don't.
Did you ever get an answer? Because I want to know.
Back in the 1960s, you know, she used to read like movie star gossip magazines. There was this little item that she read in a movie star gossip magazine. He was filming some movie in the south of France. He said, oh, it's beautiful here, but I can't wait to get home to Los Angeles. And I really miss going to, and he named a leather bar, an early 1960s leather bar, which somehow my mother either intuited from that or something, because I very much doubt in the early 1960s, you know, that it was mentioned even in a movie star gossip magazine that like, oh, and that would be a leather bar, you know?
Right. Huh.
But that's how my mother says she knew what was up with Rock Hudson.
Wow. Did she know what was up with you?
Yes, she did. Yes, she did. Because there was, as you well know, on Saturday of Thanksgiving weekend every year, there is an event put on by the Bucks MC, MC being Motorcycle Club, in New Hope, Pennsylvania.
Oh, my God. I know that event. Santa?
Yes.
Santa Saturday.
Santa Saturday.
Oh, my God.
It is a phenomenal event of all leather events. It's absolutely one of my favorites. And it all took place at the Cartwheel when I was going to it. I was home at my parents' house in Bucks County. I wanted to go to Santa Saturday. So I threw some leathers into my luggage. And then there came the moment where it was sort of like, okay, I have two options here. You know, because, I mean, my parents knew that I was gay, had known for years that I was gay, had met one of my partners. That was not an issue. But I thought, I have two options. A, I could leave the house dressed normally and pull my car over somewhere on a Bucks County road and change into my leathers and go to the event. And after the event, I could do that in reverse. Or there in my childhood bedroom, I could put on my leathers and say, you know, walk out into the living room and say, okay, I'm going to be gone for a few hours. And I chose number two. And, you know, I remember my stepmother saying, oh, you look nice. And my dad said, of course, which he said like every goddamn time I left the house as a teenager, as a college student, and yay, as an adult, what the hell are you supposed to be dressed up as? Right. And I was like, Dad. So yeah, she did know. Her incredibly perceptive mind probably put all those, you know, connected all those dots that she needed to.
Smart lady. And Drew, you do not realize the Santa Saturday at the Cartwheel in New Hope, that was my launch into the leather subculture.
Wow.
Yeah.
Great launch pad.
That is where I met the two people that I had my first BDSM leather relationship with.
Beautiful.
Yeah, that was, I'll never forget that Santa Saturday. Such a small world. When was your very first awareness that you were a leather person? That first moment when you identified and you said, yeah, this is my culture. This is, I belong.
From early childhood, I can remember watching, you know, cartoons. Like there was an episode of Josie and the Pussycats where they're on a plane going to a gig and the plane crashes in the jungle and their pilot goes out to get help. And
I do not know where this story is going. I cannot wait.
Pilot stumbles across this, you know, secret hideout of a mad scientist, and the mad scientist has developed a ray that makes evolution run backwards. And so this pilot, this big, handsome, muscular pilot, is all tied up, and he says to the mad scientist, like, what are you going to do with me? And the mad scientist says, ah, ha, ha, just you wait, and trains this ray on him and turns him into an ape. And not just an ape, but a subservient ape who is following his orders. Man, was that powerful. And, you know, whether it was Dr. Octopus chaining up Spider-Man on cartoons, but whenever there was a narrative that involved bondage and domination and subordination, it had my absolute full attention. And then puberty hits, and I was not troubled at all by the fact that I was gay, but I was very troubled by these erotic fantasies I had involving bondage and domination. I remember I had this vivid daydream of my scoutmaster, who was this big, handsome guy with a 1970s clone mustache, and like the way, you know, his chest hair would like stick out of, you know, his scoutmaster's uniform, and he smoked Marlboro Reds, and he was really, really, really good to me. You know, I was pretty shy and awkward, but he like paid attention to me. He made sure I was involved. And I just had this whole scenario that I would play in my head where he is tied to a tree so that he's like hugging the tree. And I come up and I take his pants down and I take his thick black leather belt and I like beat his butt with it. And he's like begging me to stop. And I'm saying like, no, you're going to get a spanking. You're going to get a spanking. And I loved the guy, you know? And I was like, what is the matter with me? As I progressed into adolescence, you know, these fantasies, they just didn't go away.
Thank goodness.
Oh, right, right. But I discovered when I was like 16, after I got my driver's license, I discovered a gay cruising area, you know, along the towpath in New Hope, Pennsylvania.
Oh, yeah.
You know, like I'm 16 years old, and because one time this guy twice my age or whatever said, so what do you like? And I said, I like to be tied up. And he said, oh, okay. Well, it's a shame that I don't have anything to tie you up with. And so I would bring like a hank of rope down with me.
Now that's a Boy Scout prepared.
There were a couple of times where I like whispered in the guy's ear, would you tie me up? And he said, yeah, I'll tie you up. That really bothered me because that's not normal. That's perverted. That's wrong. That's dangerous to have a complete stranger twice your age tie you up at, you know, 2:30 a.m. in the morning on a otherwise deserted towpath. What is wrong with me? By like a really odd chain of events, I think I was a freshman in college, so I'm like 18, 19 years old, and I found this whole stack of Drummer magazines. Not only did I discover that I was not the only one, but there were so many of us out there in the world that we had the wherewithal to publish an actual magazine. Mm-hmm. And in the back of the magazine, there were all these personal ads, but there were also listings of all these leather bars, including one in Philadelphia, leather clubs and organizations. So it's like, oh my God, these are my people.
And that's when you knew. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I get it. And I have this feeling that someone is going to get their hands on your book and have that same reaction.
That absolutely is my hope. Part of the reason I wrote my book during lockdown, the first weeks and months of lockdown, you know, basically sitting here at home because there's nowhere else to go, I just thought, oh my God, my life has been glorious. I have met some amazing men and I have had some incredible experiences because of leather. You think about, like, you know, the funeral or the celebration of life or whatever for a leather man, right? It's packed, right? You know, it's packed and everybody's wearing their best leathers. And, you know, first his partner gets up and says, oh my God, what an amazing man he was. He was the love of my life. And then his boy gets up and says, oh my gosh, you know, I had the best sir ever. And then his master that had collared him for 10 years previously gets up and says, oh, he was a wonderful slave to me and blah, blah, blah. And then think of, you know, the memorial service for Joe Normal, who was like, oh yeah, yeah. You know, I worked with him for 20 years and he was a good guy to work with and he had a great sense of humor and, oh, he loved golf and, you know, and yeah, he really loved a good game of golf and, well, I'm going to miss him. Leather presents us with the opportunity to lead these rich, amazing, wonderful lives. And thinking about this, I just sort of thought, like, well, I don't want to write it all down. And I didn't want to write memoirs because when you're reading a memoir, there's no real drama because you know how it ends, right? You know, the guy who wrote the memoirs is either still with us or he isn't, but, you know, you kind of know the end of the story. So I took experiences I've had and experiences that were relayed to me by other people, friends of mine, and I divvied them up to some fictional characters, and not just the experiences, but the insights that I gained from those experiences. And I figured out a story to, you know, tie them all together. And basically that's my book.
Drew, what I'm really getting from listening to this is, you know, you talked about the two memorial services, one for the leather man, one for the conventional man. And I think what you were highlighting in that leather man's memorial is that we have more diverse relationships with very significant and different types of bonds that the average person will never experience. And what your book does is bring those bonds to life.
Thank you. Thank you so much for that.
Because that's what I was feeling when I was reading the book. I was reading about these bonds that have never been communicated to me before in mainstream media because they wouldn't know how. They wouldn't know where to begin. And that's what I was experiencing. That's what I was saying in the very beginning of the interview. Oh, finally, I see myself in here and I understand these relationships and how deep they go. Going back, I mentioned in the beginning of this that I had been at your presentation at the local PSLOD meeting. One thing that really struck me in that presentation was when you talked about old guard. Can you explain to my listeners your take on old guard?
First time I remember seeing it was Oh, when we all jumped onto America Online to AOL, right? Mm-hmm. And there were the AOL chat rooms. Among the AOL chat rooms was Master for Slave, M4M, Dungeon M4M. That's where I first remember seeing the term old guard. And the whole AOL phenomenon, like the New Yorker cartoon says, on the internet, nobody knows you're a dog. And nobody knows that you're not a financially very successful leather master with a 12,000 square foot dungeon under his house. And he is looking to abduct a slave into 24/7, 365, as in 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year. Slavery, and the slave will disappear from the world and just be his property and blah, blah, blah. But, you know, that person is actually a 27-year-old assistant manager at a Payless shoe source, you know, in Canton, Ohio. And it's sort of like a quest for credibility, you know, take me seriously, as we basically do one-handed typing back up and forth about what your life is going to be like after, you know, I make you my property. And I pretty much, that's the way it struck me at the time. You know, I was like, that's probably not a real thing, because how could that be a real thing? But it has taken on a life of its own.
The term old guard?
Yeah, the term and the mythos around old guard. This is an invention.
There is no old guard. Everyone defines their own relationships in leather and BDSM. There is no standard. I think people say that they use that term because they want to convey some image in their mind that they think is a gold standard. But the fact is, it isn't there. You create your own world. And if you were trying to create somebody else's world or what you thought it was supposed to be, you'd be missing out on the whole point, which is that you make it your own.
Exactly. I think part of what the need for there to be an old guard, part of what I think that comes from is you want to do it right. I remember once I was volunteering in New York City at this annual event called Leather Pride Night. I was wearing some brand new leathers that I had. I was so fucking proud of them. They had orange piping in them. And I'm there at the ticket table next to this leather man in his 70s. And he looks at me and he's like, I can't get used to that. And I was like, oh, what? He's like, it should be black leather. You know, back in my day, you walk into a bar wearing that, you get your ass beat, not in a good way. It was like, oh my God, no, I've done something wrong. You know, there was a rule, but there's no rule book, and I broke the rule. And, you know, I think I want to do it all right, because these 20th century leather men, the lives that they led, right? It's just, it's incredible. Oh, the Satyr's Motorcycle Club, right? In 1954, it was the McCarthy era. They were having witch hunts to find homosexuals in the Army and the State Department. You know, there was a homosexual group that met back then called the Mattachine Society. And the way they worked is, if you and I were members of the Mattachine Society, and you apply by sending a letter to a post office box, and you get a response back. And the rules were that you were given a name, a first name that was not your name. If we were members of the Mattachine Society, you, Robert, would be Dave. And Drew would be Bill. And we could only use those names for ourselves at meetings. And arrival times were staggered. So you'd show up at 6 o'clock, I'd show up at 6:15, and departure times were staggered. So you would leave at 10 o'clock, I would leave at 10:15. Because it was held in private homes and nobody could notice, you know, groups of men. And the whole thing about the names, that was because if I knew your first and last name, I had so much power over you. I could destroy your life.
Mm-hmm.
I could write an anonymous letter to your employer. And when you showed up at work the next day, they would give you a box and you would pack up your stuff and you would leave. And you could never use that employer as a reference, because when your future possible employer called, they say, oh, the guy's a queer. Mm-hmm. Absolutely not. You know, I mean, your life was over. In 1954, this group of homosexual men, I don't think they would call themselves gay at that point, they formed a motorcycle club. They knew each other's names. They hung out together. They rode motorcycle. The pictures, the photographs they have of themselves, you know, on their runs, their faces are beaming joy. In that world, they managed to have lives filled with love and joy. When that 70-year-old guy at Leather Pride Night, you know, who was born in 1930, he was like, colored leather? No, that's not right. It was like, oh my fucking God. Oh no. Because I very absolutely positively respected his opinion, you know, and not all young people emerging into the scene feel the way I did. And that's perfectly okay, because, you know, many of them just want to do it their own way, and that's perfectly okay. Leather offers the same to them as it does for me, as it does for you. Here is the possibility of leading an extraordinary life.
And it's clear that that's what you wanted to celebrate with your book.
Oh, absolutely.
21st century Leatherman. Is it going to be any different than a 20th century Leatherman? If it was always about doing your own thing, isn't that still what it's about and will always be?
Yes. Yeah. But it's important to remember that leather, actual cowhide, comes into the picture because it was a survival adaptation. You know, at first it was, even though I have kind of like a masculine manner and presentation about me, I'm actually into dudes. And my way of signaling that to other guys who are also into dudes is to wear these leathers.
Mm-hmm.
And then later, when society started to open up, there were men who were into all these alternative expressions of sexuality. And how the heck are they going to find each other? If everybody's wearing a leather jacket, well, then you had to wear a black leather jacket. And that's how gay men into alternative expressions of sexuality and living on the edge, that's how they found each other. Now we have the internet. And if you're kinky, no matter what your kink happens to be, the internet will direct you to your kinky counterpart.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever your kink happens to be, it's you know, he's out there waiting for you on the internet. A lot of younger men I know who 30 years ago they would have been calling themselves leather men or leather boys or whatever, you know, there was, in the early 2000s, there was this whole phenomenon where boys of leather group, you know, sprung up across the country. And I think a couple of them are still around, but largely they're not, because if you're 22 years old and you're gay, and what's leather got to do with that? And maybe you think you feel really, you know, a lot more sexy if you're wearing athletic gear or a football uniform or rubber or spandex. Why would it have to be leather? You know, and that's all perfectly wonderful. Be the fullest expression of yourself, life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. But for me, I have never called myself kinky. I am a leather man. You know, I am the inheritor of a tradition that's going back 70 years of men who led amazing, heroic lives. And I like to think that if, courtesy of time travel, I were to meet one of those guys who was a member of the Satyrs in 1954, and he would look at me and he would say, oh, I know who you are. You're a leather man, just like me.
Well, Drew, clearly those leather men of yore are heroes to you. And by telling your story, you have become a hero for Leathermen today. Thank you, Drew, for talking with me today on Sexual Heroes.
Robert, thank you so much. This has been wonderful. This has made my day, made my week, made my month. Thank you so much.
Information about each guest is included in the show notes, along with links to my XXX homepage, Twitter account, and Patreon page. Patrons get early access to episodes. You can help me grow my audience by telling a friend today to visit sexualheroes.com and be sure to rate and review the show on Apple Podcasts. Thanks for listening.